traffic jams, tailgating, pileups. Ugh, the joys of driving. How could it get worse? The federal government wants to have a say in what you drive. That's right. The Biden administration's EPA is pushing mandates that would ban 2 out of every 3 vehicles on the road today. Don't let Washington become your backseat driver. Protect the freedom of driving your way. Visit EnergyCitizens.org. Paid for by the American Petroleum Institute.
At IKEA, your dream home is a blue bag away. No matter the size of your space or budget, we've got everything you need to turn your dreams into reality. And now with new lower prices on hundreds of our most popular products, bringing the dream home is even easier. Like the gray Strandom wing chair, was $369, now $299. And the IKEA Plus 365 9-piece cookware set was $129.99, now $89.99. And hundreds more. Shop new lower prices at IKEA-USA.com today.
Welcome to the conversation on the TYT Network. I now am joined by a reporter so good that Elon Musk has called him Clip Einstein. Wow. Ken Klippenstein, formerly of the Iron Turks, now the nation's DC correspondent, joins us to find out why Elon Musk paid him such a high compliment.
Yeah, I don't know how I'm going to come back from that, being compared to one of the greatest physicists of all time.
Literally the guy considered to be the smartest person that ever lived. So yes, Elon Musk did actually mean that as an insult. Why? We're still not sure. But let's get into it. Let's figure out how you guys got into this fight in the first place. Let's be honest, you started it. So Ken, what did you do to get under Elon Musk's skin?
Well, Ghislaine Maxwell, who of course is said to have been the madame for Jeffrey Epstein, who himself was convicted of trafficking underage girls and trying to, you know, bring them into a prostitution ring. She of course was indicted by the FBI, arrested by the FBI. And, you know, I had seen this picture of her posing next to Elon Musk. And, you know, I thought that was newsworthy and indicative, not just of, you know, Musk's relationship with her, but or Musk's association with her, I should say. We don't know the nature of their relationship, but that same type of association enjoyed by all sorts of different billionaires, extremely powerful people, movers and shakers, which, you know, I think at the very least says they're willing to tolerate people like that in their midst. So I tweeted it out and said, you know, it'd be interesting if people sent this to Musk so we can try to get some kind of response from him, because unsurprisingly, he's been pretty quiet on the whole matter. And it was amazing. So many people were sending it to him that you could just scroll through his replies. And it was just that photo after that photo again and again and again. And I guess that got to him because he, you know, this culminated in him responding to me, as you just said, calling me Clip Einstein. And actually, I didn't take any offense to that. I took more offense to the meme he would send later, which was a very phoned in. It was Ralph Wiggum from The Simpsons, and it's the old joke. Oh, there it is now. He's saying in the cartoon show, he's saying, "I'm helping," but you know, they edited it to say, "I'm a journalist," and it's the worst Photoshop job I've ever seen. I expect better of a billionaire and someone who has the resources that he does. And not just that, he didn't even make the meme himself. He took this. He stole this from one of his loyal supporters who had sent that. So I was just offended by that sort of lackluster. I expect better bullying from a multi-billionaire like that, frankly.
Yeah, I hear you. I mean, if you can create SpaceX and Tesla, you should know your way around a meme. And by the way, Ghislaine Maxwell now being held in custody, obviously considering suicide as we speak, and the guards are planning to take a break as we speak, and the video cameras are planning not to work as we speak. But that maybe is an investigative report for another day. Knock on wood, hope it doesn't happen. Now back to Elon Musk. So do we know the context of that picture that he took with Maxwell at all? He claims it's a photo bomb. You know, I know what a photo bomb is, but I don't know what he means by that in that context.
So he's saying she just kind of jumped up behind him and said, you know, here we are, take the picture. And I don't think that's plausible for a number of reasons. Now, of course, that's technically possible. You know, that could be what happened, but that wasn't the only association he had with Epstein world. So prior to this, he and his now ex-wife had attended a party held by the billionaire. He had attended another event along with several other billionaires of Epstein's. The New York Times in addition to all of this, recently reported that Epstein had told them when he was still alive that he was advising Elon Musk's company. Now, you know, I should note Musk disputes this. He says that's not true, as you know, one would expect him to do. But these associations go far beyond just that one photo. It's very misleading to say. I think it's a straw man to say, oh, you're taking one photo and saying that, you know, this means that I have some deep connection with them. I'm not saying the one photo is. I'm saying the photo is a sort of visual representation of this kind of overlap between these worlds, not just on the part of Elon Musk, but on the part of high society generally, who very clearly was willing at the very least to tolerate these types of individuals in their midst. And I want to stress, all of these associations happened after Epstein had been prosecuted for trafficking minors. So he can't say, oh, I just, you know, how was I supposed to know about this? I find it very hard to believe that people in high society who, you know, gossip and talk and worry a lot about you know, their public image in ways that ordinary people, you know, don't or don't have to. So I find that all hard to believe. In addition to all that, his brother, it was reported by Business Insider, had been set up with a girlfriend by Jeffrey Epstein. So it's not just Epstein himself, it's associates, family members. Again, I'm not saying he's the same as Jeffrey Epstein. You know, I'm just saying that there clearly was associations that succeeded, that came after Epstein's sentencing and, you know, widely reported role in these terrible things that he did. And I thought it was newsworthy to talk about why is this accepted and tolerated in the highest echelons of society.
Yeah, so that's interesting. So first off, I want to say that because you entered an Epstein party doesn't mean that you did what some folks did at Epstein parties, right? And from my understanding of the reporting, they usually didn't do it at the parties. They usually did it behind closed doors at other times. So I'm sure a lot of women went to Epstein parties that had nothing to do with what Epstein had done. We know that Trump went to Epstein parties. We know Clinton went to Epstein parties. So it doesn't mean that they're all guilty. And so I don't just say that because they get touchy about it. I say it because it's really true. I'm sure a lot of people went to those parties that had nothing to do with the crazy stuff that happened. But Ken, you know, it's interesting. Off air, somebody was telling me about these high society sex parties that I thought were kind of a fiction. I thought they were, you know, eyes wide shut kind of nonsense. Is that real? I couldn't believe that it was real. It turns out, no, it's real. There's definitely apparently sex parties specifically for the rich. And then you, when you see Epstein in that context, you're beginning to realize, oh, that's a niche within high society sex parties. Is, oh, you like young underage girls, oh, you should go to Epstein, right? And so on the one hand, we have the pizza guys who are nuts and who think that Tom Hanks controls the world along with Bill Gates and Dr. Fauci and it created coronavirus so they could be child molesters or whatever insane thing that they think, right? On the other hand, it turns out there was this group of elites that molested kids. So what's your sense here? And I know it's such a broad question, but like, and it's so hard to tell, but how big was it? Like, I mean, Epstein winds up dead in the most curious way imaginable. I mean, that's a hell of a thing for the video cameras on that hallway not to work. So how big do we think this thing is?
Well, I know a lot of folks in law enforcement, and specific to his death, you know, we have, and you've reported on this too, Cenk, we have conditions in prisons that are unimaginable. You know, that being said, it's hard to imagine that someone like Epstein is not gonna get, you know, some sort of special treatment, if only for the fact that the warden doesn't want to get in trouble, which ended up happening. I think the prison warden ended up getting fired after this. They see a very, you know, sort of VIP type figure come in here. But the conditions are very bad in prisons. I don't think it's, you know, I don't think it's, you know, implausible that he may have been able to kill himself and you know, just the kind of procedural checks weren't in place to keep an eye on him, because these, you know, these prisons are a disaster. That being said, you're 100% right that in the reports that I mentioned before, and there are plenty of other reports now, because thank God for the Me Too movement kind of shedding a light on these things that had happened quietly, but that ordinary people, you know, who aren't going to billionaire galas or fundraisers and things might not know about. But what you find is there's a tendency to tolerate in your presence people that you probably really shouldn't. Perhaps for expediency, I you know, if you ask me to guess, I would guess Musk is, you know, doing what a lot of other billionaires do, which is being an operator, going and getting the FaceTime with the kinds of people that are going to keep your company afloat with credit and things of that sort. And that, you know, I would speculate that, you know, there are probably advantages to attending these sorts of parties. I'm not necessarily talking about sex parties, just the, you know, functions themselves. But I think it's great that there is this blow up around this. You know, Musk is going to say, of course, you know, this is guilt by association. I'm not saying that he's guilty of any crime. I'm just saying that, you know, if there's anything he was guilty of, it was tolerating the risk. And in fact, the, you know, factuality that he was around some of these people. And so now there's going to be a social cost to that. And I don't think that's such a bad thing.
That's interesting. Yeah. So let's talk about Musk for a second. We do another show called Old School where we goof around a lot more. And we ran a poll called Elon Musk, yes or no? Okay. That was a whole poll. And this was before you and him beefed on Twitter. And so you can go to tyt.com/polls to vote if you want. We'll put the link in the description box if you're watching on YouTube or Facebook. But Ken, putting aside this particular picture, and again, we'd have no idea if that means anything or it means absolutely nothing. And I understand why he'd be upset about it. We get that he's terrible at memes, and calling you Clip Einstein is like nothing but a compliment. It makes no sense. And he's a super strange dude. And he thought, and he, another compliment he gave you was he thought it was like hundreds of bots that had attacked him when it was just your followers. So congrats on having that many followers. But but last thing here, and I know this one's too broad too, but what's the deal with Elon Musk? Yes or no? It was seriously, like, he's an enigma. Tesla is creating electric cars, which is great for the environment. But then he says he's going to support Kanye West for president, and he says coronavirus is not that big a deal. Who is this guy?
Well, he's a bit of a spiritual figure to many of his supporters, you know, whom I heard from and were very outspoken, not just on Twitter, but, you know, I got text messages and voicemails from all sorts of people. I sort of realized that I'm not joking when I say this. He is sort of like a megachurch pastor for like Reddit atheists or something, like in the sense that he is offering to them something that's very real, a sense that something is being done about the climate, which I can understand why people would be, you know, afraid of that. That is very concerning. However, I don't see, you know, and it's great that, you know, businesses are going to provide, you know, consumer services that are, you know, more eco-friendly. But the problem with this is the same problem, in my view, with a lot of solutions to climate that are based on consumption, which is that they're more expensive. These cars cost, what, $80,000? That is not a practical option for the vast majority of Americans. You know, that critique of his business being what it is, a lot of his supporters say, and you know, they expressed to me, and I'm sympathetic to this, they said, look, he's actually doing something about this climate stuff. Like, shouldn't we be sympathetic to that? And I would say I would be sympathetic to some form of collective action on the part of the, you know, government, who really has the sort of resources to address this on something beyond the sort of, I think, microcosmic scale that a discrete business could. But again, he commands this cult of personality that I think is almost concerning, because you know, when you see him speak, to get people uninitiated like us, we recognize this as very odd behavior, to put it kindly. But I wonder if part of this is kind of what we were talking about before. You know, extraordinarily rich people tend to be isolated from other people because you're spending so much time sort of maintaining and trying to preserve your wealth that you become cut off from ordinary people, and then you start to go a little nuts. Right? And he's not the only billionaire that has these very eccentric, you know, views on things, or does, you know, has weird meltdowns on Twitter. You know, this may just be ordinary people getting a glimpse into the life of how the ultra rich live and being sort of shocked at how different it is.
Yeah, yeah. On the other hand, I like eccentric, so my jury's still out. So, by the way, apparently so is the Young Turks audience, because 70% voted no, but 30% voted yes on Elon Musk. So we'll see how the poll comes out after this latest dust up. But Clip Einstein, we appreciate you joining us on the Young Turks.
Great to be with you, Jack.
All right, back on the conversation on TYT. We got another great guest for you guys. Simona Grace is the founder of Moms in Office. She's appropriately also been selected as Mom of the Year in California. Simona, welcome to the Young Turks.
Thank you for having me.
No problem. All right, so first let's talk about the scope of the problem, then we'll go to the solution, which is what you started. So what percentage of Congress, for example, is women right now?
Women are about close to 24% right now in the current Congress. However, very few of them have children under 18.
And what percentage is that, Simone?
It's about 5%. So less than 5% of Congress are women with children under 18.
Okay, yes, that is a small percentage. I'm going to guess that the percentage of women with children under 18 is higher for the general population.
Yes.
Much higher. This is semi-obvious, but why do you think that is?
Why do I think that the percentage of women who are raising children today is higher? I think there's a very good statistic that we can compare this to, which is about 80% of women in America by the age of 44 become mothers. So that's a really huge contrast between women in Congress, about 25 women, less than 5%, who are currently raising children under 18.
Yeah, and so what is it that's preventing those mothers from being able to get into Congress?
You know, I think it's a complex situation. I think we can start with cultural bias. I think women who are running for office are already in a tough position convincing voters and convincing donors that they should be the ones elected, because Congress does not look like us. And when it comes to mothers, it's especially difficult because voters and donors constantly question women with children whether they can balance their responsibilities as a congresswoman with the responsibilities of being a mother. So number one thing that's very difficult for women who are raising children, it's just a fundraising.
Yeah, so I remember the situation with Wendy Davis in Texas, where she had gone and I think gotten a degree from Harvard Law School while she had kids. And then she got attacked by the Republicans saying, how dare you go get an education while you've got kids? But Simona, I never hear that complaint of men who went to Harvard Law School. No one yes. ever asks, did you have kids at the time? What did you do with your kids? So there's just this enormous double standard, isn't there?
That is correct. And I think especially in politics, we all know the images of congressmen, senators, or even presidents running for our presidential candidates running for office, taking photos with a child. And whenever you see a man politician posing for a photo with a child, it's all of a sudden more personable and relatable. But when you see the same thing with a woman, it's something that we're not accustomed to seeing. We have to normalize these images of women in politics also being able to be raising, also having the ability to raise children and run for office at the same time and serve the United States.
Yeah, another phenomenon that's a significant problem is if you're a normal person who isn't very wealthy, it's awfully hard to have enough money to run for office, not just because of the money you gotta raise, but how do you support yourself as you run for office full time? And then if you add on top of it being a mom, and then you add on top of it someone like Katie Porter is a single mother of three kids, my God, that's near impossible. How did she do that?
Yes, I think that it's a huge problem that people with working class backgrounds, people of color, women who are raising children have a much harder time running for office, because most of the people who are running for office, let's just face it, they're independently wealthy. So, and I think a lot of people don't know this, that running for Congress is a full-time job. So if you decide to run for Congress as a mother, especially a single mother, I'm a single mother myself, you have to think about losing your health insurance, because health insurance in this country is guaranteed through your employment. How are you going to pay your bills as a woman who's running for office if you don't have a job? Katie Porter by far was the most qualified candidate to win that seat, and she still is. And I've experienced firsthand in 2018 the difficulties that she had raising money. She had to work twice as hard to raise half the amount of the counterparts who maybe are male and Republican. So it is a real situation, and it's a real problem for women, for mothers, and also for the general population of the United States who can afford to run for office.
Yeah, absolutely. And I know a woman who ran for office, and we talked about it on the show before. Allison Hartson ran for Senate in California, and it's a full-time job, and she had to let go of her job, you know, used up all of her savings and didn't have insurance. It's just near impossible. So, and by the way, for people who then discriminate against them on top of that, are you nuts? That, like, that means they're superwoman. You should be like over the top in voting for them and supporting them, because if they can handle all that, they can handle anything.
You would think that.
I mean, look, I'm a married father of two, and I already find it impossible. I mean, let alone if I was a single dad with three kids, I don't know how I'd get anything done, let alone run for Congress. How does Moms in Office help them, Simona?
So Moms in Office is a political action committee. I founded at the end of 2018. And Katie Porter was a big inspiration for me. I was involved with an organization here in Los Angeles called Working Hero. And Working Hero was supporting Katie Porter. And at this time, I realized that she will be the only single mom in Congress if she wins. And she is, until this day, the only single mom. At that time, I also started looking into political action committees who support moms, and there were no political action committees in the country supporting moms. So we have a few established line organizations that support women, Democratic women, pro-choice women, but it's very, very difficult for candidates to get funding through these establishment aligned organizations, because before they even speak to them, they have to raise about $300,000 from their personal network. So I wanted to remove these barriers. I wanted to remove the challenges that prevent so many women from becoming the policymakers we need today. So I founded Moms in Office as a single working mom here in Los Angeles. And I said, you know what, if nobody's doing it, then I have to do it. And fast forward now to 2020, we grew into a coalition of moms in politics across the country. Our executive director ran for Congress against Dan Crenshaw in Texas. She's wonderful. I have somebody who challenged Kevin McCarthy in 2018, who's on our board. Women across the country who are not putting their weight behind these moms who are currently on the campaign trail.
That's wonderful. You said something about $300,000. Say that again, because I think it's really interesting.
Yes, a lot of political action committees, we all know about them. They have done a lot of great things for women, but let's just face it, they do not help working class women. They do not help moms. They don't help the women who have not raised $300,000 from their personal network. So once you call an organization like that, they say, let me look at your fundraising, let me see where you are, let me look at your district and see how winnable it is. And if the women have not raised the amount of funds that they require, they do not help them.
Guys, I want you to just sit back and let that sink in. It affects women potentially more, and that's why Simona's organization is so important, but it applies to all of us. Do any of you out there have $300,000 you could raise from your network? I'm sure some of you do, but I'm sure a ton of you do not. That's it, you're eliminated in a so-called democracy. Nobody will even entertain you. Even progressive groups, even groups that are meant to help the group that you're a part of, etc. Nope, if you're not wealthy enough to know people that can give you $300,000, you got almost no chance of becoming a congressperson. That's insane. That's part of why we have to get money out of politics. But until we do that, we need moms in office. So first of all, Simona, how can people help?
People can go to our website. It's momsinoffice.org and click donate. Most of our fundraising comes from grassroots supporters, small dollar donations from all across the country. And I'm very proud to say that our organization also commits to give close to all of the funds we raise directly to candidates, because everyone who's involved in Moms in Office is a mom who's working for us on a voluntary basis. So we are very committed to helping moms. Please go on our website and click donate, and even $5 makes a difference for us.
Yes, and if you're watching this later on YouTube or Facebook. We'll put the link in the description box, so it's really easy to click. You should always check that out. So Simona, last thing, what's your ideal here? 10, 20 years from now, what does it look like where you think, oh my God, we did it?
So I think it's very important to say that I am helping moms, but we have to help everyone to diversify Congress. We have to elect candidates who are in touch with what it means to raise a family today. And we have to elect Americans who know what working families face, what working families face each day. I want Congress to look like the rest of America, and that's my goal.
All right, Simona Grace, Moms in Office. Please, everybody check it out, doing really important work. And if you want that voice represented, it's so important for issues like paid parental leave, family leave. That voice needs to be amplified so that it could be represented in Congress. And unfortunately, it's got a very small representation in Congress right now. Simona, thanks so much for joining us. Really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.